I was just talking about the case we had today in The Hague and how that went. Greg, welcome in the show.
Thank you. It is so nice to be here. And thank you, everyone, for listening to me in English.
Yes, many people understand you in the Netherlands. The most people, they understand and they can understand enough to follow these kind of conversations.
Yes.
Greg, you are a lawyer based in California.
Yes, I'm a health freedom lawyer in California. I stand for the constitutional rights, the freedom of Americans to remain unvaccinated. And I have just filed a case, an unprecedented, amazing case in federal court in California that has the potential to change everything.
Could you tell more about that claim?
Yes. We have done something for the first time. We have proven causation. We have proven that the unvaccinated are the healthiest people on the planet. We have proven that vaccines cause chronic illness. And I say cause in the full sense of the word, causation. We have proven that the vaccines are causing immune system dysfunction. They are causing a pandemic of chronic illness all across the country. And we used the tools of big pharma against them, meaning that we found the very best citations on the planet, the most authoritative citations all throughout the scientific community, and put them all together in a massive compendium of information submitted to the court. And the tool to do this is called judicial notice, where you give the court authoritative scientific citations and quotes, and the court is required to respect the authoritativeness of those citations. And so we have proven that vaccines are dangerous. We have also provided the court with a pilot survey where we calculated the exact risk of being vaccinated at any level. And what we found was that the unvaccinated children have chronic illness at 5%, whereas the vaccinated nation is at 50%. 5% unvaccinated, 50% vaccinated. That gap, that difference is so massive. It is so large, that gap, that only vaccines can cause such a gap. Let me give you an example. We surveyed 1,482 unvaccinated children, unvaccinated Americans. That's a lot. That is a lot of people, you guys. That is more than the CDC surveys for many of their studies that form national policy. We have a 99% confidence interval. If the average American has a 50% chance of chronic illness, that means you flip a coin. If it's A, it's chronic illness. If it's B, it's not chronic illness. In our study, we only found 5% of unvaccinated with no chronic illness, with chronic illness. That means that you would have to flip a coin 1,482 times, and it only lands on tails 5% of the time. Do you know what the risk of that is? I mean, the likelihood of that is? We calculated it. It's called a p-value. It is 1 in 84 with 83 zeros after it. That means, people, you are more likely to be hit by lightning on the way to winning the lottery. And then on the way home, you win the lottery again. That is more likely to happen than for this to be by chance. I have proven causation.
This is shocking news. If we talk about the study, from what age on did you study? Of what? Because if I look back, I had my children vaccinated, and you make me feel very bad at this moment if I hear this. if you look back the what I did research on what group did I research and what from what age on how far back did you go? Because of course a lot has changed during the years, especially the amount of vaccinations which are administered now. If you compare it to when I was young, I was born in the end of the 60s. I think we got maybe 5 shots. I don't know exactly, but meanwhile. I don't know how many they get, but it's incredible how many. This survey, how far back did it go?
We looked at all ages. So we even had some 70-year-olds who were participants in the survey. It is very hard to find adults. We only had 210 adults, which is still a large number. 210 is good. And especially for some of these illnesses, which are very common, like diabetes. Because you can compare. We found 0 diabetes in our entire survey. That's impossible unless vaccines are causing diabetes. We surveyed 1,272 children. Most of the children were from New York and California. We found something amazing when we did the survey, and it was so surprising. We found that when we looked at the results from New York and California, they were nearly the exact same. That means that people are not lying. It means it was random. It just so happened that the results from New York matched the results from California. And those results both match the other states when you put them all together. That provides an internal consistency, which increased the confidence level above 99% in our confidence interval. So we have a statistically robust survey. We began with a pilot survey to show our null hypothesis that vaccines are dangerous. The result was more than we expected. We did not understand that the results were going to be this good, that they were going to be this statistically strong. We have proven causation.
So this means the industry doesn't only make money on the vaccines, but also on the supply of new patients for the future, right?
Yes, that is correct. The system of modern medicine is built on a pharmacological model, and the unvaccinated are different. The unvaccinated are a telescope back in time to a time like the 1950s when everyone on your street was healthy. There might only be one child in your school with a neurodevelopmental disorder, maybe one child in the whole school with special needs. Today, it's the opposite. Now, every other child has some issue, digestive disorder, prediabetes. They all have something. My case is meant to bring us back in time to the 1950s, to a time when everyone was healthy. Can you imagine living on your street and everyone's healthy? Think about how great that is. That's what we all want.
Yes, well, this is, I'm shocked to hear this. At the same time, it's of course something which was in the air all the time already, but the industry is very powerful and they suppressed all these kinds of sounds and all these rumors, which were, they called them. What does this mean? You made a petition to the president, right?
Yes, it is a petition. It's called a petition in court. Sometimes it's called a complaint. And the complaint is to the president. We are not blaming the president. We support the president. The reason the president is named as the respondent or defendant is because only the president has the power to give us the relief that we want, the solution that we want. The solution is desegregation. We want, in America, it used to be that blacks and whites were separated. There was schools for the blacks and schools for the whites. That's called segregation. They're doing the same with the vaccinated and unvaccinated today. There is schools for the vaccinated and homeschools for the unvaccinated. Employment for the vaccinated, self-employment for the unvaccinated. It is segregated. We are asking the president to desegregate society, to prevent discrimination against anyone based on vaccination status. Our court documents are so good. They are so well presented. They are vetted. They are authoritative. They can be used in any court in the world because we are using the tool of judicial notice. That means that when I receive a court order that accepts the authenticity and the admissibility of these documents, they can be used in any court. Any lawyer in any court in the world can take my court order and use it instantly in that foreign court. This allows our case to have a worldwide impact.
Well, your timing is very good. Of course, this year, the industry brought it to a new level with this discrimination, which we expect. We hear already in the media and the ministers that are talking, although they are saying it should be voluntary, these new vaccines they are at this moment, they are administrating. They started already in Europe. In the States, also, I understood they already started to vaccinate these new vaccines. In a way, we must be, it's very good now because people are open now to accept that maybe vaccination is not such a good idea. Once your petition has been granted, what is the next step?
Yes, the next step is a confirmation study where we take our pilot survey and turn it into a much larger nationwide confirming study. We surveyed approximately 1,500 Americans. That is an incredibly high number. But even still, we want to survey more. We want to survey 10,000 or 20,000. We want to confirm our results because when you go against pharma, when you attack big pharma, there is a higher standard. We are held to the strictest of standards. And so it is not enough for us to stop at a pilot survey. It's not enough for us to present 400 science exhibits in court. We are continuing this process to confirm our results. And once the public sees and understands that the unvaccinated are the healthiest people on the planet, that is the end of the vaccine program. Everyone wants that for themselves. Everyone wants health for themselves. The unvaccinated study is the Achilles heel of Big Pharma. They are so afraid of the vax versus unvax study. It is the one thing they will not touch. The one thing they will not do. There is only one thing they will not study, and it is vaxxed versus unvaxxed. The reason why is because they know the answer. We know the answer. I have filed the answer in court with my pilot survey, with additional studies such as the Paul Thomas study. All the studies say the same thing. The unvaccinated are the healthiest people on the planet. Moreover, we also have a whole set of exhibits devoted to national data on infectious disease, showing that disease mortality declined before every single vaccine came out. We did it for every vaccine, varicella, we did it for whooping cough, we did it for every vaccine. We show that mortality was already declining because of engineering before the vaccine was invented. Engineers brought us to where we wanted to be with plumbing, better living conditions, and supermarkets brought us incredible health. We achieved this. We did it. We succeeded in the 1950s. And then the pharmaceutical industry came along and said, we need to inject everyone with more and more. And it just kept getting worse in the 1980s and in the aughts. And now we've reached a point where we are at a crisis mode. Our citizens are dying. Our citizens are being decimated. The unvaccinated have the answer. They have the cure, the solution. They live like it's the 1950s. They are healthy. If there was a block, if there was a street filled with unvaccinated people, there would only be one person on the block with an issue. Everyone else would be healthy, even the adults. That is so amazing. That is what we all want. We can achieve that. And I'm asking the court to help bring me back than in the 1950s.
So all these people who have been demonized all these years because they didn't take vaccines, if you just get a bit of taste to it, yeah? If you realize now that they were the ones who were right all this time.
Yes.
What kind of time span are we looking at?
Yes. I will be in court on February 22nd to request the judge issue this order that I am describing today. And we will know then on that day, February 22nd, if we have achieved our order, we have achieved our court order, or if we have to appeal. And if we appeal the case, then it goes up to the Ninth Circuit and eventually to the United States Supreme Court.
What is the ultimate goal? Is there also the prospect to hold the big pharma responsible for the damages they caused?
Absolutely. That is the ultimate goal. Thank you for asking, by the way. You're the first person to ask me about that specific question, which is a sign of foresight. Thank you. The answer is we have a plan. The plan is to expose the vaccine program as the cause of this pandemic of chronic illness. And then we will be asking for the abolishment of the 1986 law that provides immunity to pharmaceutical manufacturers. That is basically stage two of what we are asking. We're not asking for it right now, not in 2021. We have to do the national study first. But eventually we want to remove the immunity protection from vaccine manufacturers. Once that has been accomplished, then all of the lawyers who are already ready to go, they are ready to sue, they have all the information, they will go after the pharmaceutical industry, and it will change everything when we accomplish that. Because, as you know, 95% of all litigation is in the United States of America. We are ready to go.
That's very good. Because you talk about this immunity. We see now with the new vaccines on the market, the companies, they also have been granted again this immunity. What is your opinion? Because in my opinion, an immunity cannot stand. It's immoral and unethical, and therefore it should be void. Because if you bring something on the market, for example, I sell a car to you, I produced, it has no brakes. And I say, but you, I don't tell you it has no brakes, but I ask you to grant me immunity. Do you agree that this kind of immunity that it should be void?
I do. I agree. The immunity gives an excuse to the manufacturers to not make a safe product. The reason why that is a big deal with vaccines is because vaccines are different than other products. They are designed to harm the individual. They're designed to alter the human immune system. They're designed to, and that's what they do. Vaccines work because they alter the human immune system. And they alter it permanently. And this creates chronic illness in exchange for temporary antibodies, which are supposedly evidence of immunity. And this problem manifests in the vaccine manufacturer keeps doing more and more adjuvants to try to make the vaccine as potent as possible, to get as many antibodies as possible, because they're all about effectiveness. They don't care about safety. And we know this because they never will study a control group. I read all of their product inserts. I did more than that. I didn't just read the product inserts. I looked at the documents behind the product inserts, the applications for the FDA licensure. And what I found in those instances is that when the pharmaceutical company claims that they studied a control group, they're lying. For example, with Gardasil, they compared girls who had 3 Gardasils to girls who had 4 Gardasils. That's not a control. That is not science. That is a rigged trial. They lie about safety. And My job is to expose that and not allow sayings and slogans to get in the way of the facts. My job is to focus on the numbers, to require that the state prove the exact risk of the MMR vaccine, the exact risk of the whooping cough vaccine. I need to know the number. I will not stop unless I receive the exact number.
And did you look into the vaccine, which is at this moment brought into the market against COVID-19?
Yes. The vaccines for COVID-19 are nucleic acid vaccines, mRNA. They are designed to turn your cells into vaccine manufacturers. So again, it permanently alters your immune system. The vaccines are not adjuvanted because they are an intracellular product. And that does make them different. They are more more invasive. But they're invasive in a different way. Everyone is aware that COVID vaccines are experimental. But what people need to know is that all vaccines are experimental. Every vaccine is an experimental biological alteration.
Yes, but this vaccine is, I think, of a higher risk because from this vaccine we know less than even from other ones. Are you going to try to take legal action to stop the vaccination campaign, the current one, against COVID-19?
My job is to protect against discrimination. And that job involves making sure that people have the choice. So if individuals want to choose a COVID vaccination for themselves, they are free to do so, but they cannot force vaccination on others.
I totally agree with you, but I believe that voluntary means also full informed. And this is, of course, a problem because people at this moment, they are not being informed about the real risks. Our governments are telling them a tale about how safe it is, although we all know we don't know how safe or how unsafe it is. And I totally agree, everybody should take all the vaccines they want if they feel they should take them, but it's necessary they are informed. This is why we are preparing in the Netherlands at this moment. We are preparing a court case in which we demand that this vaccination campaign is going to be postponed until all the necessary investigation has been done, because they are taking now a trial of the of this vaccine. They take that into the phase of the campaign itself without the full consent and informed consent of the people taking it. They don't know they are taking a drug which has not been fully tested as it should be. I think the third phase the first phase is now being done at people involuntarily. Is this not something which should also be addressed in the United States?
Yes, I expect there will be litigation on exactly what you described. In America, we have a federal statute that defines the vaccine as emergency use authorization, EUA. That means the vaccine must be voluntary to all individuals. So the question in America today is, can employers mandate the vaccine? What are the consequences if an employer? But the government acknowledges that the government cannot mandate the COVID vaccine currently.
No, they cannot do that here either. But the problem is, of course, they abused this emergency permit to start with this vaccine. The problem we see at this moment is, and we see this throughout the whole COVID crisis, they don't make it mandatory directly but indirectly. They are playing with the employers, they are playing with the people who are in nursing homes, and they are threatening these people that they have to leave if they don't take it. And this is our biggest concern. As well, they start with medical employees and doctors. They should also all be vaccinated. And we get a lot of people who are coming to us, and they are scared for this vaccine. But on the other hand, they cannot refuse it because they lose their jobs. So this is why we will go to court about this. Is this the same in the United States?
Yes. Yes, I expect litigation will be filed in specific cases where the employee is being required to get the vaccine in order to continue employment. And the issues in the case will be about whether the employee has a disability, can't get vaccinated, whether the employee asserts a religious exemption. And so that's been the pattern that we've observed in the United States, where where somebody tries to mandate this pharmaceutical product, and then it puts the individual on the defensive. The individual has to say, oh, I have some exemption. You have to respect my rights about some reason why I shouldn't have to do this. The whole paradigm is flawed. We need to shift the entire burden over to the state to prove vaccines are safe, but they're not. The state can never meet their burden. Vaccines are dangerous. They're unavoidably unsafe. And we know this because of the vaxxed versus unvaxxed study. It is the one thing that is so obvious. It is our strongest position. It's like we have a giant weapon, a giant win, and we never use it. We're always on the defensive, trying to, you know, claim that we have these religious rights, or claim that we have these, you know, other informed consent rights. When in reality, vaccines are dangerous. They are killing this nation. They are killing other nations. They're decimating the planet because they are injuring immune systems. Let me ask this one question. This one question says so much. Where is your immune system located? Where in your body is it located?
I believe it's everywhere.
It is everywhere. That is why a vaccine, which is designed to impact your everywhere, it is designed to change your everywhere. What does it do? It changes your everywhere. Vaccines change everything. And when we go back to the unvaccinated, my graphs, you guys, you have to see my graphs, my evidence. It is so exciting to think about this. 5%. Not only the children, but the adults have a chronic illness. That means 95%. Can you imagine? Go to school. Go to work. Go to a block party, and 95% of everyone there is healthy.
We will
imagine how great that would be. That is in our future, and we can show that to the people. And we have a duty to show that, because now we have the evidence. It is a new year. It is a new time for us.
We put your studies on the website for everybody who's interested to look into that. Another thought, which we are also working on here, is all the medical staff which are participating in administering this vaccine. In our opinion, the patient or the person taking the vaccine is not being fully, has no informed consent, they are committing a crime. Don't you think so?
That is a very good question. The answer is that medical battery is what the law calls a forced medical procedure without informed consent. But a medical battery also requires knowing and willful misconduct. And in many states in America, there is an exception, meaning special interest legislation that pharma wrote, that says that anyone who gives a vaccine is not liable for giving a vaccine unless they were reckless or intentionally tried to harm someone. And That is why, for example, this right of informed consent has been so watered down in America that it has become weak and nearly unenforceable in any sense of a crime or even a tort, even suing for damages and in a battery sense in tort.
Because what we are talking about is here the Nuremberg Code. Yeah, these rules are not for nothing. We in the Netherlands, we have also a law which is based on the Nuremberg Code. It means there are very strict regulations for experiments with people. At the moment, you are working as a medic and you are administering a vaccine from which you know or you're supposed to know it's still in experimental phase, like this one. Okay? It's not finished yet. Everybody who can read can see that many of the risks have not been investigated yet. If you know this as a doctor, are you not liable then? Because this is reckless. Isn't it reckless to administer a vaccine if you have this information?
Yes. That is a very good question. You posed the question in terms of Nuremberg. In the United States, though, the Nuremberg Code has only partially been put into law in California. And that law is limited and subject to the other law, which only requires a doctor to give a vaccine information statement, a very simple document, basically written by the manufacturer. So the pharmaceutical industry knew about this issue and they got around the issue by saying, well, if we just provide this one document, then we're safe. And that one document is never going to provide informed consent. You see, the problem is we have a counting problem. We have a number problem, meaning that doctors do not have the number. They cannot say what is the risk value of MMR. They cannot compare risks because they don't have an accurate number. The only way to get a number is to do a control study to compare vax versus unvax. Everything else is just fluff. It's just speculation. It's a distraction. Literally everything, you guys, is a distraction other than the vax versus unvax study. I mean, or another way to say it is that all the other things are context. For example, toxicological studies of mercury are very helpful to show that this is a neurotoxin that's in vaccines. But ultimately, if you want to get to the risk value of mercury, you have to study a group that received it and a group that didn't. It all comes back to the vax versus unvax study, everything. And because once you have those numbers, then you can start to talk about real informed consent. And that is part of what I am requesting in my case. I am requiring that the government provide the numbers. And I know they can't. They've admitted they can't because they've admitted they've never done a vax versus unvax study.
You are fighting a very powerful party, the Big Pharma. Do you think you have enough breath to come to a victory against Big Pharma?
I do. I think they're going to need to suit up and get a lot tougher if they want to take me down.
Well, I really hope, because this is a year with a lot of changes and a transition, but not a transition. the people, the powerful people and the Big Pharma is hoping for. I hope we can realize another transition. Talk about that. You are also aware of a case in New York about the PCR tests. I just told you we had a case today which is quite similar. Could you tell us something about that case in New York?
Sure. So the PCR test is a test to see whether a patient has COVID. And the test is very flawed. But the test is used by mainstream science in order to give teachers and students a pass, the authority to go to school, to go to work. And so there is a case in New York recently filed that challenges this PCR test. It challenges it on a scientific basis. Basically, it's like this, you guys. The PCR test will look at a gene, and it'll look for one gene, one marker in the COVID-19 genetic profile. Or you can do multiple genes. You can look for multiple markers. And then you can cycle. You can turn the dial to look. To do more cycles, you're more likely to find the presence of this one genetic marker. If you do less cycles, then you're less likely. So what this means is that if you're a public health officer, you can turn the dial. You can turn off COVID. There is no such thing as COVID. The vaccine worked. Or turn the dial the other way. Oh my God, we're all going to die. Give me all the emergency powers. You turn the dial one way, the vaccine worked. You turn the dial the other way, I'm now Caesar and I rule over all of you. That's the problem. It's that there is a flaw in science. We are not doing science correctly. And the result of not doing science correctly is it allows these bureaucrats, these government officials, to do whatever they want to you. That is where the problem is. And so there are great lawyers in New York who know this and who have brought a case, including my co-counsel, Ray Flores, who brought a case to challenge that law.
And it was in the case in particular, it was about a school. Could you tell about what was the case? Because I understood that this is also about discrimination.
Yes. There are constitutional claims that discuss the children's right to education. And there are also other constitutional rights, like the right of bodily integrity, that protects someone from forced testing.
Because we did several cases now about the PCR test in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. One we have now already in appeal. And we did this on the base of the it's the CE certification. It means it is let into the market on for certain purposes. Yeah? It's the intended purpose. You probably you know about this. We said in court, look, we have two different ones. Most of them which are on the market are for research use only. And some are in vitro diagnosis. We went to the court and we asked them, listen, you cannot use these tests as a diagnostic tool. And you cannot, if you take a test, it's positive. It doesn't say, you cannot say you have COVID. You cannot even say you're infected, in fact. We lost in the first, we are now in appeal, but on the other hand, it made clear that you are not allowed to make tests on people without symptoms and, of course, not use it as a diagnosis. We think this is a very important case because it will not only take the foundation out of the whole society. I call it a medical dictatorship because I don't know how it is in the United States, but they are trying to install here a society which is ruled by tests and by vaccines in the next mm-hmm. stage. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to stop that, and God forbid that I heard already in March they want to test the whole population every month. Wow. And on that you get, they are talking about, you get some kind of test passport, and this gives you access to certain facilities. If you don't have that, you will be outside the society. It will be like an apartheid. Is this the same development you have in the States?
Yes, it is. That there are legislatures that are pushing for mandatory COVID vaccination and mandatory testing. And there are laws that currently exist in every state that allow for mandatory testing during emergencies. That's a big problem. And so we expect litigation. And one thing to keep in mind is that, and this is surprising, I'm going to surprise you guys. One thing to keep in mind is that when the polio vaccine was introduced, the pharmaceutical industry and the AMA, they changed the definition of polio so that the vaccine worked. And then all of a sudden there were less cases. They're doing the exact same thing today with COVID. So here's the surprise. The pharmaceutical industry wants us to win these cases. They want us to get the PCR test out. Right when the vaccine comes in, the PCR test is out. And then they move toward things like antibody surveillance so that they can claim the vaccine worked. They're doing the same thing with polio today. The pharmaceutical industry tends to be about two steps ahead. The only thing that they are not two steps ahead of us on, vax versus unvax study. They won't touch it. They claim it's unethical to study the unvaccinated. They say that if you ever see an unvaccinated child, just inject them right there. You just don't even ask why. You just inject them. And that is their thinking. They are so backwards. They say we have to destroy the evidence. That is their argument. Destroy the evidence rather than look at the health of these unvaccinated children. That is how afraid they are. But they're not afraid of PCR.
But in the States, it's not possible mandatory testing. Can they do that?
No.
No, this is the same here. I mean, there are some countries where they cross this line or this red line, but here is still it's not possible. But they are trying here as well to do the same with indirectly. Like, for example, the case we had today. If you say you will not let anybody back into the country without a test, it's an indirect test, especially if you live in the country and you cannot back, you cannot come back. You have no choice.
Yes.
So, Greg, it's very interesting. We want to give the audience a chance to ask some questions. So I will ask Martina, do we have questions?
Yes, we have questions. And Greg, thank you so much for your clear but also very, well, positive explanation of everything. It's not a very positive situation, but the way you explain is very easy to understand, very shocking about the polio. I didn't knew that. So thank you.
Yes,
I have several questions. One of them is it true that 50% of the PDAs is funded by Big Pharma or FDA, sorry?
That is a very good question. We have two researchers who have focused on exposing the exact amount that the FDA and the CDC are receiving from Big Pharma. The CDC uses a foundation in order to receive donations. The answer is that I don't know, but I do know that local health departments are receiving more than 50% of their budgets from the CDC. This makes every health department across the United States beholden to the CDC. And the CDC, we know, is getting their funding. You know, they are vaccine patent holders. They are beholden to the pharmaceutical industry through the revolving door. You know, there's been a lot written about it, but as to the exact number of how much the CDC Foundation and how much the FDA gets from pharma, those are numbers I don't know.
Yeah, but that's shocking already, no? That these institutions are funded by the industry. We have the same in the Netherlands, so it's no difference. Here they're also funded by the industry, and this we should change in the future because they should be there for our safety and not to make sure that businesses can continue their faulty business, right?
Exactly.
Martina, you have more questions?
Yes, I have. Is your research peer-reviewed or somewhere officially published?
No, it's better than that. We prepared our research for court, for litigation, which means it goes into the judge. Normally, if you do a scientific study, you just have to get it reviewed and approved by a few colleagues. Not us. We're bringing it to the judge. We're bringing it to the court. The standards are higher.
Well, I really want to join the court appointments. I don't know how you say it in English, but I really wish to see you acting over there. Awesome. Did the COVID vaccine took part of your research as well?
Yes. The answer is that we have many sections of our court paperwork devoted to COVID, being COVID is experimental. COVID is the means by which the public health authorities are clamping down on the populace so that for the first time everyone else gets to see these dangerous public health departments. We've all seen it for decades. You know, we all know what public health departments do. But now, for the first time, the public is also seeing how draconian, how dangerous these public health departments are. So yes, I have whole sections devoted to COVID.
Okay, thank you so much. And someone is asking, is there a link to the court? Are these open for public? Is there any live stream we can see?
Thank you for asking. Yes, everything that is filed in court is available at my website for the case. That website is informedconsentdefense.org.
Can you put that in the...
Yeah, I think probably chat. Caroline is always very fast with typing the websites into the... Well, there she goes. Oh, there, Greg, thank you. Great.
You're welcome.
We will share it on Facebook as well, so everyone can watch the live stream. Yeah, there are a lot of rumors in the Netherlands as well about... following question, is it true that vaccines cause autism?
Yes. I know vaccines cause autism for two reasons. Both of my reasons are mathematical facts. Number one, we surveyed 1,482 Americans, and we only found two cases, or maybe it was one case of autism. The rate of autism is about 1 in 40. That means I should have over 10 cases of autism. That means that the likelihood of that happening by chance, you know, so I got to get the exact number for it. It's so much more fun when I give you the exact number. Because then you know. And by exact number, I'm speaking about the p-value, of course, which is the odds that that could just be by mere accident, by mere chance. So let me get that for you. And then after that, I'm going to give you the exact Pearson correlation coefficient that proves mathematically that vaccines are causing autism. Okay. So the answer for autism, there it is. There's autism. Okay. So we found only 0.21% of our population had autism compared to 2.5% of the general population. The likelihood of that being by mere chance is 1 in 128 million. Could you imagine flipping a coin 128 million times just to try to, you know, hey, maybe it'll work out this time, right? You'd spend your whole life flipping a coin trying to prove vaccines don't cause autism. We have proven causation. Vaccines are causing autism. Moreover, and here's another key point, in the cases of autism that we did have, I really should pull it up. It was either one or two cases, but the mother was vaccinated during pregnancy. We found zero cases of a pure child, no vaccines during pregnancy, no K shot. They never have autism. So whenever you see an unvaccinated child with autism, ask, was the mother vaccinated during pregnancy? It's a very key point. Also, the K shot has benzyl alcohol. It has aluminum. That's terrible. And that also can cause autism and all sorts of issues. In fact, the group that we surveyed that where the mothers were vaccinated during pregnancy, they basically look like they're vaccinated. They look almost just as bad. It is those pregnancy vaccines are terrible. And then the K shot is terrible too, but it's not as bad. Okay, so that's part one. That's the mathematical answer. Part one is the p-value showing one in whatever it was, 128 million, something like that. It's all in my graphs. Then the next answer is the correlation coefficient. So what statisticians do is they will look at the way that things are correlated in terms of incline, like the rate of increase. So what we did is, let me pull up my graph here. Okay. So what we did is we took the CDC schedule of recommended vaccines for children, and we plotted it along a graph. You know, you can see it go up and such. And then we plotted autism along the same graph. And then you run a Pearson correlation coefficient to see how much they're correlated. Are they both rising at the same rate of incline, and what's the rate of correlation? We found a 0.91 correlation. That is a very high correlation. That is remarkable. So that is another mathematical proof that vaccines cause autism.
Thank you for this very – oh, sorry, Jeroen.
No, this is good. It's finally because this has been said for many years, and many years people have seen already this correlation, but now it's stated that it's like that. This is quite shocking.
Very shocking indeed. Another question: how do you deal with the media that will try to debunk your claims, stating that vaccines are safe?
Show me the numbers. I have the numbers. I have the pilot survey numbers. I would love them to contact me. And because they don't have it. They don't have the evidence. And which is why they only rely on personal attacks. If I invite you to a mathematical question, a mathematical debate, and you rely on personal attacks, what does that tell you about them? You know, they don't have evidence. They're so afraid of the vax versus unvax study. So that's my answer. Show me the numbers. And that's my job, to push on that point, to never let it out of sight. Whenever somebody tries to say, oh, well, you know, vaccines have been proven, show me the numbers. Whenever somebody tries to say that aluminum is in the crust of the earth, and so how could it be, show me the numbers. Compare those who get aluminum to those who don't. Everything else is a distraction. Well, maybe it's race. Yeah, maybe that's the reason that children are, you know, healthier than on here. Maybe it's social income equality. Maybe it's gender confusion. None of it is true. Show me the numbers. Everything else is a distraction. The CDC, they try to focus on their little pet theories, you know, and say, oh, maybe race is the reason why children spontaneously develop ADHD or epilepsy. No, it's not. It's the vaccines. We've proven it. We've proven causation. Everything else is a distraction.
Have you experienced many personal attacks from the industry and from the media?
Fortunately or unfortunately, no. I think that they are afraid. They're afraid to engage me. And tell me, what do you think? Should they be?
Well, we see here, because we experience a lot of these attacks, also personal attacks. If you tell the truth, if you try to bring out the truth, the media attacks you really heavily. We experience this at the last few months. Every time we come with facts, they attack you with nonsense. But they have the power in the media, so this is a big fight. So I'm wondering that so far they didn't touch you.
They can't. I mean, I'm using their own evidence against them. I have 400 science exhibits. It's their own stuff. They are, I mean, it would be folly. They should ignore me. They should try to pretend I don't exist. It would be their best strategy. That's how I run it in game theory.
Then I'm having another question. A lot of children in the Netherlands are having cancer. Very, very sad. Is that because of the vaccines as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, we looked at pediatric cancer. Now, you have to keep in mind that pediatric cancer is not as common as other issues like, you know, ADHD, digestive disorders, and so forth. So you're not going to see as many cases, which means that, you know, the p-value, for example, is it's not going to be as striking as in other examples. But let me pull up my chart and tell you the exact risk of pediatric cancer? Because you're going to want to know. There it is. Okay. So in our control group, we found zero cancer in anybody. There's no pediatric cancer, and there was no cancer in adults. Now, the cancer rate in adults is 6%, and we surveyed 210 adults and found zero. So the likelihood of that being by mere chance is 1 in 439,000. So that's pretty good, okay? Okay, guys, remember, you have to flip a coin 439,000 times. Okay, that's going to take up a lot of your time, okay? That's causation. You know, if I go into court and say, well, you know, judge, there's a 1 in 439,000 chance that my client didn't kill, you know, John. I'm going to lose that case. You know, that defendant's going to jail, okay? That's vaccines and cancer for adults. And then you have, but for children, the number is much smaller. For children, because the rate of cancer is 0.35%, you know, we surveyed 1,272 children. That means that the likelihood, the p-value for that being by mere chance is only 1 in 86. So for pediatric cancer, it's much tougher for me to make the case that vaccines are caused. If I didn't have the adults, it would be much harder to make the case.
Okay, Manu, thank you so much. Does Big Pharma research the long-term side effects at all?
No, they do not. They do have post-marketing clinical trials where in isolated incidents, they will look for one thing, and it is comical. They will do things like they'll study maybe the DTaP, and they'll say, well, does the DTaP result in an increased risk of eczema for those who are age 5 through 8? And then they'll claim that that's long-term monitoring. And then they'll rig the results. For example, they'll say, well, we're only going to look at children who come in for eczema appointments. We're only going to, you know, like there's already a group of children that have known to have eczema. Or they'll say, you know, we're only going to take children who go to at least 3 doctor's appointments. Well, a lot of the unvaccinated, that's not them, you know, or they're going to naturopaths. They're not going to, you know, the major hospitals for this stuff. And so pharma, that's one of the things that they do. That's one of the ways that they rig their post-marketing surveillance. But the answer is there is no long-term surveillance of vaccine injuries, okay. Which is why you need the Vax versus Unvax study. I mean, it tells you the answer. All you do is you just look at the health outcomes, because what do you have? I mean, if you survey someone who's 60 years old, and you ask them, tell us every single thing you've ever had in your lifetime. That's 60 years of data right there.
Okay, last question, and then I give, then Jeroen can finish it. Are you afraid of your safety?
No, okay. Not at all.
People are worried. Yeah. On Facebook, I see many messages. I hope he is safe, and thank you so much. And doesn't Big Pharma want to kill this man and things like that? But everybody is so grateful for what you're doing tonight. Thank you so much, Jeroen.
Yes, Greg.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. And I look forward to work together with you the next years, because we will have a big fight, and I hope we manage to get Big Pharma small and get the people the safety they deserve. So thank you very much again. And
yes.
We hope we enjoyed really, or enjoyed this big word, of course, because this is not enjoyment, but this is really, really interesting and shocking. And we thank you very much. We hope to see you again in our show.
Yes, I hope
likewise.
So too.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. Bye-bye.
Welcome back, my friend, to The Silent War with your host, Dustin Nemos of Nemos News, where we continue with your help to break the cycle of fake news. Now, I'm joined by a very special guest. Before I introduce him, I want to talk a little bit about how we're already, most of the country, hesitant or at least cautious about this exploratory, experimental RNA vaccine. Even if you were a pro-vaxxer before, everyone, even medical staff, frontline medical staff, are refusing at rates often higher than 50%. So with that said, I'm introducing Greg Glazier. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay, I've only read it, so I've actually never had it pronounced to me, so I've got it lucky. Lead counsel for the Control Group Litigation, and they are seeking to protect us essentially from forced vaccines at a key moment in history. So, Greg, thank you. Welcome to the show. I've been introduced to you by mutual friends, and you know they speak very highly of you and your work. What's going on with the forced vaccines?
Sure. We have a case, and I wanted to just highlight first, Dustin, I really like your show, and I watch, and it's fun. It's fun to be here. So,
if you can find it.
Right. Yeah. As big tech has their way. Now, big tech is a huge supporter of vaccination, and the idea that pharma and tech are separate is actually an illusion. They're the same. They're biotech, and that's who.
Marry them in this. Okay.
Yeah. So I have a federal case that was just filed to protect all Americans from mandatory vaccination. My case is amazing. It is the best case ever filed, the most comprehensive, most authoritative scientific case ever filed on the subject of vaccine risk. We covered everything. We vetted everything. I have multiple PhD, MD experts, and we have basically we use pharma's own evidence against them to show that they know vaccines are harmful. They know they're dangerous. They know they've never done control group studies and placebos, yet they push it anyway on this whole lie that vaccines are safe and effective. So I prove it. Prove it all in court. And we're filed in federal court, and we have a hearing coming up on George Washington's birthday, which is February 22nd, where we're asking the federal court judge to issue an order to protect all Americans from mandatory vaccination. What that means is you get to go to work, you get to go to school, you can travel, and nobody can demand that you provide a vaccine card or immunity passport or anything like that. And this is very important at this particular time in history because I think your listeners know the writing on the wall. I mean, you know, this is moving toward the Bill Gates agenda, immunity passports and, you know, digital certificates for your vaccine record and so forth. So we cover those issues in our court papers. One thing that makes my case very unique and interesting is the scientific proofs that we have brought to the court's attention. We did a survey of unvaccinated Americans. We surveyed, and by unvaccinated, I mean zero vaccines over the course of the individual's whole life.
Wow.
We surveyed 1,482 Americans. That's a lot. That's a massive number for a survey.
I'm surprised there are so many left unvaccinated, frankly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we calculated that too. Our estimate for the number in America, we think about 800,000 total, which means we're going extinct. We are going an extinct breed. I say we. I'm not one. I've received vaccinations in the past. I would never get one today, ever. However, it's wonderful that there are these individuals out there. So the unvaccinated. So we surveyed their health. We asked them, what are your medical diagnoses? How confident are you in your answers, et cetera? And the results that we received were jaw-dropping. Dustin, these are the healthiest people on the planet. They don't have anything. ADHD, autism, they don't have it. We only found one case of autism. And it was in a case where the mother was vaccinated during pregnancy. And even with that, you know, the rates of chronic illness are about 5%. It's even lower if you take out all the mothers vaccinated during pregnancy, you know, all those children. They look kind of similar to the vaccinated, unfortunately. But yeah, you know, you compare the vaccinated have 60% chronic illness. That means if you flip a coin, let's just call it 50%. If you flip a coin, heads means you have a chronic illness for life. Tails means you're okay. That's the vaccinated population.
Yeah.
Whereas in the unvaccinated, it's one in every two. I'm sorry, it's only 2%, meaning one in 50. Could you imagine flipping a coin 50 times and it only comes up heads once? You know what the likelihood of that is?
Yeah, you have to be more afraid at that point of snake bites and injuries than you do of actual illness.
Exactly. I mean, imagine somebody came up to you and said, Dustin, I'd like you to flip a coin 50 times in a row. Just keep doing it until you get heads every time. You would say, no way. You would take up my entire life. I would spend my entire life doing your coin flipping exercise.
Yeah.
Right? That's the likelihood this could be by chance. So what we do in our court case is we actually calculate all those values. Those are called p-values, probability values, and so much more. So that's the whole point of my case. We bring in experts to calculate the actual risk of vaccination. And what we found is that vaccination is the worst health decision that one can make for their health. Basically, if you want to have a chronic illness,
sure,
you know, ADHD, autism, diabetes, vaccination is your bet, because we're not finding it in the unvaccinated. And we've used this method, which is the classic epidemiological method from the founder of epidemiology, John Snow. This guy, all he did, it was so simple. It was kindergarten math. But sometimes the simple things are the most true. All this guy did is he observed that there was a cholera outbreak, this infectious disease outbreak in his area. And he noticed that some people drinking from well A would have cholera and others drinking from well B did not. And so all he did is he calculated numbers, like who's drinking from well A and what's their cholera and who's drinking from well B. Well, everyone drinking from well A had cholera and no one from well B had cholera. That's causation,
yeah,
right? Now, modern science tries to, you know, bury it. They say, well, you know, we want to do such and such formulas, but anybody with common sense can figure this out. We did the same thing. You've got the vaccinated well A and the unvaccinated well B, and you just compared it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Wow. So normally, you know, no one's accused lawyers of having an ego or anything like that. So when you say my case is awesome, I'm going to believe you at your word. Now, my problem goes into the justice system itself. Is there any optimism that we'll actually find justice? Because, you know, even at the best of times, the courts don't usually come through for this issue or any of the real issues facing the people. They usually seem to take, you know, the big interest side, big pharma in this case. They've already shown a propensity to protect through, you know, the vaccine court and the vaccine laws now where they have immunity. So what hope do we have? I know there's a bunch of new Trump judges in there, and that's kind of a little bit of hope. But do you think we'll actually get anywhere?
Yes. Well, I'm a big supporter of American justice. There's also an ethical rule that governs lawyers like myself, where we are instructed not to undermine the public's confidence in the judicial process. So, you know, I'm not going to be one to criticize the courts or anything like that. I would say there are many strong rays of hope coming. Number one was the United States Supreme Court just ruled just recently. They struck down Governor Cuomo's, the New York governor. They struck down his ban on church gatherings. Right? He was limiting church gatherings. And in the process of that strike down, Justice Gorsuch, a Trump appointee, said that the Supreme Court case, Jacobson versus Massachusetts, governing vaccination, is questionable. We waited 116 years for this, for something like this to happen.
Yeah.
The health freedom movement. So for the first time ever, we actually do have a chance to unseat Jacobson, to unseat mandatory vaccination.
Wow.
And the timing just has to be right. You know, there's something very interesting about courts, Dustin, which is that they are part of society, you know, meaning that the public input, public relations, you know, the social metric is all relevant to a court's decision. And a great example of that is Brown versus the Board of Education. You're familiar with that case, the desegregation of whites and blacks. So in the 1950s, it was a seminal case where the court came in and said, you've got separate schools for blacks, separate schools for whites. We're going to integrate them. We're going to desegregate. They were segregated. We're going to desegregate them. So right now you have separate schools for the vaccinated and separate and homeschool for the unvaccinated. So we're asking for the same thing, desegregation. So there's already a precedent for this. The thing about Brown versus the Board of Education was that before that case won in the Supreme Court, there were tons of cases just like it that failed. Great lawyers, great case, great evidence, everything aligned. But every time they lost because it wasn't the right time. Sure. I think right now in 2021, it's finally the right time. As more and more people are waking up to the lunacy of, you know, how many masks are we supposed to wear now? You know, how many vaccines are we supposed to get now? It's just, it's a joke to the point where we're waking up. So, oh, fortunately, there's no ethical rule that stops me from criticizing public health.
Good. Thank gosh. So, you know, you've given me hope. I mean, I was really let down with the election fraud recently, even by the Supreme Court. But isn't there a Supreme Court quote, unavoidably unsafe in regard to vaccines? I mean, there's already a little bit of a precedent where they've talked about it. So, you know, the timing where there's more caution than ever, even in places like Chicago and L.A. And these fairly leftist dominated, I would say, thought areas, you've got resistance, frontline medical staff, nursing, doctors, people refusing 50-60% ratios. I mean, I've got hope just because of people standing up saying no.
That's a great point. Yes. And you correctly cited the United States Supreme Court in the case of Bruchowitz versus Wyeth, the manufacturer. That was a Scalia decision from 2011. And the court specified that vaccines are in the same category as dynamite and chainsaws. No matter how you design them, they are just unavoidably unsafe. They're going to hurt some people. But notice what the court didn't say. How many people? How many people do vaccines hurt? That's the thing. The only answer you're ever going to find for that is if you do the test. You do the John Snow test. Look at well A and well B. But the government admits they've never done it. And you know why they admit that they've never done it? Because they know what they would find. Frankly, I think they have done it. They just haven't published it. Because they know that if they survey the unvaccinated, they're going to find what my litigation found. They're going to find what other doctors have found, like Paul Thomas found, like Dr. Hooker found, like Dr. Mawson found, just one after the next. Everyone finds the same thing. The unvaccinated are exponentially healthier. And in my case, we have the numbers to show exactly what that number is.
It's very cool what you guys are doing with this. I wish you the best. I hope you're taking precautions for your own safety. This is the kind of thing where, you know, big people feel threatened, and you know, they are going to lash out in every way they can to ruin you personally, politically, economically, and all of the things that they may do.
They can try, but the only one to fear is God. You know,
yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, to fear pharma is failure, right?
Well,
but to revere God, that's where the win is.
Yes, and I know that when I pick up a chainsaw, I have to be very careful. There's a chance this thing, although it may be necessary, can hurt me. I don't feel that vaccines are necessary, and I don't think people are warned the same way they are with chainsaws about the damage that they do. And with vaccines, since you're putting it in your body, it's more like cranking the chainsaw holding the blade at the same time. It's really ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we need to cover here that I didn't ask that I should have about your case? How can people help? How can people stay informed about this? You know, how can people learn about vaccines if they're not aware of some of the findings that you've got or others? I mean, what will you suggest for people?
Thank you for asking. All of the evidence in our case is available at informedconsentdefense.org. And perhaps you could put a link down below. Okay, great.
And now, is it something people will be able to download and share?
Absolutely, yeah. It's all the evidence we presented, organized everything in the most accessible way for people to see, you know, very nice, colorful charts and graphs, so it's super clear. And everything has the court stamp, which shows that it's been filed in federal court. And we'll have our first day in court on George Washington's birthday, February 22nd. And whoever loses is going to appeal. So, and it just keeps going up until you get to that court, that great court that you mentioned, the United States Supreme Court.
You have to hurry because they're going to try to stack it before you get there. So thank you, Greg, for your time.
You.
I appreciate everything you're doing. I'm going to put links below. And everyone, please share, like, subscribe, go check out what they're doing, support this cause more than anything else. Freedom is important. We talk about that all the time. But when it comes to things like education and vaccines, where they're targeting children, you know, that's a lot of damage done forever. And that's probably the most impactful thing that you can do. Give a child a good life, raise them the right way, you know, try to give them a two-parent household. Don't vaccinate them, not medical advice. You know, don't beat them. You know, try to do the things that you can do to give them a good start, because that's going to change the whole world. And there's nothing more impactful than vaccines, I think, maybe other than just the loss of parents, but destroys children. And I'm tired of seeing these poor mothers with children banging their heads in the wall and they don't know what to do because their kid took a vaccine and they trusted the wrong doctor. So thank you again, Greg. I appreciate you very much.
Thank you, Dustin. Bye-bye.
Everyone share, and we'll see you on the next one. Thank you.